Welcome to Cangria, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And what a week.
Oh, I'm fine. Tell us about this week.
Yes. Now, what we are going to be doing, actually, we're recording a Christmas show next, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
In advance. And we're also doing again this year, the big gay quiz of the year.
Right.
Some people may be familiar with the British Great Big Fat Quiz of the Year.
Yeah. But it's not fat people.
No.
Even though we're going to be doing...
It's just a large quiz.
Gay people.
Yeah. And what our annual New Year's week show...
Right.
For the last 3 or 4 years, we have talked about the biggest news stories of the week. The sort of funny stories that people...
And by week, you mean year.
By year, yeah, exactly. And that's the one I was looking for. You know, that we come across, that we... Big Gay Quiz of the Year. If you think you have a question about something that's happened in the past year that you want to quiz our panelists on, I want to talk about mediocre radio in this case. And that is WWL. Yeah, it is a... U.S. station.
Because the first time I saw it, I thought it was WWE, but it was just a misprint. Because an uppercase L and an uppercase E look similar.
Yeah, I'm talking about Seth Dunlap is this radio host's name. WWL Radio, which I think is in New Orleans. He is a gay man. He's a gay man. And I think he went out to a pride event or he was out somewhere. And then his radio station tweeted in response that he is a pejorative term for gay men. But they didn't type pejorative term. They wrote the actual term.
He's a poof.
No, I do like poofs.
Okay.
As a word, I am willing to claim poof back.
He's a fan of Britney.
Friend of Dorothy, actually, was the phrase they used. He was a little light in his loafers, I think they also tweeted. So that was, what are the euphemisms, Alice?
He was a little, you know what I mean?
It reminds me of the Family Guy episode where they say it explains something like an Italian man being euphemistic about someone's sexuality, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
He's a fan of the musicals. Friend of Dorothy.
So yes, this radio host who is a friend of Dorothy's.
Yes, is gay. And then his radio station tweeted out at him the F-based pejorative term.
Okay.
Which is not great. Absolutely not great. And it was all over the news. We didn't really talk about it much when it happened because it was... it's sort of...
tabloidy.
Yeah, a little bit. And it was certainly quite interesting. But then the story kind of got even more dramatic, where it turns out the person who tweeted this pejorative term was Seth Dunlap.
Oh.
I know. Same said gay radio host tweets out pejorative term. It's a whole brouhaha. He was eventually fired after refusing for about a month and a half to resign.
Okay.
He's like, no, I'm innocent, even though all the evidence was pointing to the fact that the IP address that did the tweet was his own cell phone.
Okay.
Which was in his possession at the time.
So he hacked...
Oh, he may well have been granted access to it.
Oh, okay. Well.
Anyway, so the radio station is suing him for $1.5 million, or they've tried to sue him for $1.5 million. He filed a $1.5 million lawsuit against the radio station.
For wrongful firing?
Yes.
Wrongful dismissal, I think, is the technical term. This sounds like another story that we covered this year, unfortunately. It doesn't... The details are quite different, but the overall tone...
Yeah.
Got kind of a...
Well, he tried to sue them for $1.5 million for the pejorative-based tweet.
Okay.
So, you know, it was, how dare you, this is, you know, workplace harassment, even though it turns out it's very, in all likelihood, him that did the tweet.
Harassing himself.
So, yeah. So the local sheriff department then wanted to investigate him for extortion because... setting up your own boss as a boogeyman in a fake homophobic slur in order to get tons of money from a lawsuit could be extortion.
Could be.
But the New Orleans judge said there's not enough evidence. Like, it's not... There's not enough meat and potatoes here. It's not...
Yeah, it's the way the justice system works, where there's a difference between saying, we believe you're innocent, versus we are not positive we can frame you as being guilty.
Gay man tries to fake a brouhaha over... Yeah. I've said that a few times. I think it's my new favorite phrase. Mm-hmm. Fake a, you know, this big scandal, sues them for $1.5 million. They find out it was him all along. It's like a Scooby-Doo mask when you lift it up and it was the granddad in the, you know, the whole time. But it was...
And early on in the episode, he was literally walking through walls and it turns out he's in a rubber mask and covered in flour. How did he walk through walls? It doesn't make sense.
But it does at the end when they reveal. It
really doesn't.
It's not a wall. Anyway, whatever. Do you know they're making a new animated Scooby-Doo?
They keep reviving this instead of...
It's becoming a movie now.
Why don't they make new stuff?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to making new stuff?
I agree.
Why does everything have to be nostalgic?
Yeah.
Actually, mind you, it also could just be the idea of, like, that's what a culture is. It is just
repeating... Recycling?
Well, repeating the same stories. It's now part of the cultural mythos.
I don't agree. But I want to move on. I want to talk about Madonna briefly. Florida man. I know. A Florida man.
Just that's the best right there. Just a Florida man and Madonna. There you go. That's your story.
All you need to know.
That's your story.
I'm on the side of Florida man on this one.
Okay.
A Florida man is trying to sue Madonna for showing up over 2 hours late to her own concert.
Okay.
And everyone's been there. You get ready for a concert. You want to get time to park, because parking's a nightmare at venues.
Yeah.
You want to have time to get your seat, get a drink. You know, the concession stands are so expensive. So you're there half hour at the very latest early. Mm. You know, your show time's 8. You're there at 6:37 getting ready to sit down. She doesn't hobble on stage until 10:30. And you've just been sat there twiddling your thumbs for 2 hours, wasting your life.
No opening act?
Well, even if there was, they would have had to stretch it out a long time to fill the gap.
I have been to more than a few concerts where I much preferred the opening act.
Mm.
It's awkward when it happens, but it's a thing. Bizarre.
So, yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said, though, about musicians who are starting so late when people have gone and spent all the money to be there. Or...
I mean, it would start a weird precedent. I mean, I would love to sue every ophthalmologist I've ever seen, because for some reason, ophthalmologists are the worst of all the doctors for this. If you are an ophthalmologist, in my experience, if you are an ophthalmologist, I would love to hear from you why this happens, why you are told you must show up half an hour early or they will cancel your appointment. You get there half an hour early. You fill out a form that takes 2 minutes. And then you wait an hour and a half. So you see them an hour after you're meant to be there. And then you only see them for 2 minutes. And I want to, like, they charge you late fees if you show up late. Or they just cancel. I want to charge them late fees. Why can't I do that? Why is my time not that important?
I think a lawsuit is a bit far.
It's a bit much.
But I think if you're...
Like, you could request to the stadium.
A ticket,
yeah, yeah.
If you're paying good money, and it's not cheap these days.
No.
I was looking at Elton John seats, and the cheapest Elton John seat in the Canadian dates is $300. That's the cheapest seat.
The cheapest Cirque du Soleil tickets were like $250.
Yeah. You know, these aren't...
Yeah.
They aren't cheap. And then if you show up and you get there early, you know, the venues often have guidance on when to show up early to, you know, to avoid the rush. You get there early, you line up, you sit down, and then to wait, it's like, you know, the artist is a part of this transaction as well.
Yeah.
You know, they should have an obligation to be there on time.
So lawsuit, maybe not, but at least a partial refund, if not a full refund, because that is not what you paid for.
No,
Failure to deliver service or something? No. I don't know.
We'll be talking more about failure to deliver service a little later in the show.
We are not talking about my dating life.
Oh. We are going to have a bit of a country kick to this week's show, starting off with Casey Musgraves' Follow Your Arrow. I love this song. And the reason why I want to play this song is at the CMA, the Country Music Awards, Lil Nas X is the first openly gay black artist to get a country music award.
Right.
He is not the first openly gay person ever to get a country music award.
Okay.
And everybody, a lot of people reporting on it was like, oh my God, Lil Nas X, the first in the world history ever. Mm. Amazing. Is the first gay black man to win an award. And let's not mitigate that, but let's not ignore all of the gay folks who won awards before him.
Right.
Including the writers of Follow Your Arrow, which won the Song of the Year in, I think, 2014. And they went on stage, they took the award. It is the highest award in country music for songwriting. Well, this is Follow Your Arrow by Casey Musgraves, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
Tell me about your life, Sebastian. How are you doing? Well, how are things? Are your eyeballs okay?
Oh, yeah. No, I... for those... Actually, some people may have forgotten that I do occasionally experience temporary blindness now. I have the rare condition of migraines so bad...
I thought you were going to say closing your eyes.
No, no, no. It's well, that also...
Causes temporary blindness?
Absolutely. That's such a dad joke. It's a good one, too. Normally, I would say you should be ashamed of yourself. But that's actually... That's something to be proud of. It's like if someone goes, there's something in my eye, and then you say, it's your finger. Anyway. Yeah, no, I get migraines so bad it blurs my vision, but I'm also in the small category of people who experience migraines but no headache, because migraine is a type of inflammation where headache is a symptom. It's not that migraine is a type of headache. But no, as you know, and as some of the audience knows, I've gone back to school, and the way they've organized the program, about a quarter of the workload for the entire program happens now in November.
Yeah, all at once.
All at once, and it's so that we can focus on co-op placements and interviews and building our portfolio next semester. So this semester, they're just dumping everything on us all at once so that we can focus on other things, which is fine. In a way, it kind of makes sense. It's very compassionate of them because they're very keen on us getting good positions, but it also means that it's just nasty how much work. And I had to get up before the sun the other day.
And it's the winter, so that's early.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually early. Yeah.
This time of year, it's you could get up at 9 and the sun is still in bed. Lazy little piece of so-and-so. How are you? How are things going with you?
I'm all right. We've been having technical issues. Our website is down.
Oh, our website is down and disappeared.
Oh, my God. I can't even, I own the domain. We discovered about last month that our previous website, the Velvet Studio, which was what we were called for 2 or 3 years, also just up and vanished. And then we're like, what happened to that one? And we own all the domains. We just don't have the actual websites. And then canqueer.news went down. So our entire archive is now MIA. Also, you could be listening to us on the podcast on Spotify.
Podbean's working just
Podbean
fine.
Podbean is working just fine. And you can reach our, I think there's over 100 episodes on Podbean. Now, like I said, if you want to help us out with the website, let us know at Talk Can Queer on Facebook and Twitter. Both of those websites still work.
Yay.
We'd appreciate any help you can give. Now, let's talk Hong Kong. Let's talk Hong Kong. Oh. Hong Kong had their pride, but it wasn't a parade. It was a meeting.
Okay.
They were able to have pride meetings.
Okay.
Because right now, the whole idea of a bunch of students or people marching anywhere is met with a little concern.
It attracts the wrong kind of attention.
And by wrong kind, you mean riot police and tear gas.
And hoses.
And hoses, yeah. And so the whole point is right now, Hong Kong has a huge pride parade usually. Yeah.
Okay.
But in this case, the police banned them because of the whole democracy protests.
And for once, a pride parade was banned, but not for homophobic reasons. It was actually for their own safety. But to be honest, though, I am glad for the safety of the Cantonese people in Hong Kong that they did not march, that they had a meeting and said, if they switched to like a family gathering, like a picnic format, especially if they do it in Repulse Bay, because the view is nice and it doesn't smell like dead fish. Unlike, I can't remember the name of the beach. Go there. Beautiful view. Nice breeze off the water. You got that big stone hotel behind you. Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to marching, polluted streets, bad air quality.
So, I mean,
maybe get the hose.
And that's what these protests are partially advocating for, is direct democracy.
Yeah.
So I think it is unfortunate, very unfortunate, that the Pride Parade fell victim to the escalating violence.
I'm glad that something happened. I would rather see something satisfactory happen instead of some kind of a sad compromise. But so long as nobody got hurt, and so long as they got to do a demonstration of some kind.
They had a meeting? It was the Pride meetings.
But was it meeting
an like assembly? They were able to gather, but not move anywhere?
Like a Robert's Rules meeting? Not like
No, there wasn't like standing order 74, you know. They were able to come into a spot, confer amongst themselves, and then leave.
They didn't even do BBQ?
But not all at once.
They didn't do the fish balls and the squid on a stick?
It happened today, day of recording, so I don't have the on-the-ground reporting in front of me.
You take a whole yam and you put it in the fire. When the fire goes down...
Why are you talking about yam?
for barbecue. That's what in Hong Kong when you get together with your friends on a beach.
Okay. And we have to be cognizant and compassionate to the fact that each of these spaces have different ways of demonstrating what it means to be queer.
Yeah.
You know, that's distinct to who they are. It makes me think of folks who identify as two-spirited. Okay. In Canada, they would see that is broadly it is the identity of having more than one spirit animal. I think within certain cultures of Indigenous folks across Canada, but there are many, 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 many languages
and
Indigenous cultures, like tribes.
When you're talking
the whole
about
shebang, yeah.
North American Indigenous cultures, it's like saying
there's what, like hundreds of them.
Yeah, like it's like saying Europe or like saying Africa or like saying, you know, Southeast Asia. That it's when you're if you describe the two-spirit experience in Canada by specifically looking at the Mohawk, the Cree, the Blackfoot, that's like saying Europeans are obsessed with pickled cabbage because Germans just love their sauerkraut. Sauerkraut, that's it. But you know, they don't eat sauerkraut everywhere. They just eat sauerkraut in Eastern Europe, and not everybody eats the same kind. And
it's about being culturally competent and culturally sensitive.
And being, you know, not... It's the difference between ethnicity and race as well. Mm-hmm. If you're to talk about race in North America, you could ostensibly lump all the Indigenous cultures together, but that would be weird and bizarre because ethnicity is a much more exploded concept, and race is also a weird made-up thing. And ethnicity is a real phenomenon that you can observe in the world.
Well, we are going to jump to another song. This is Drake Jensen, Which Way Does the River Run? Drake Jensen is a Canadian openly gay man who does country music.
Pretty sure it's downhill.
What's downhill?
The way the river runs.
No, in all cases, the Yukon River runs up.
What?
It's a true story. And the Nile also runs up, not down.
No, that's just because the map is turned
so
that north is up, and that if you turn it the other way around, the Nile goes down.
Yeah, and then all the other rivers go the wrong way.
Right?
What? Anyway, you're confusing me. Drake Jensen's Which Way Does the River Run? And we'll be back just after this.
Knocking on a window pane, he said, let me in, it's gonna rain. Kissed and they watched the storm and they held each other to keep warm. They just met that day, he played guitar near the old cafe. She said she liked Lightfoot's song, the one about moving on. And on the way to Montreal, when it got wet, the car would stall. Spoke a little high school friend, she laughed and she said it made no sense. They went a little out of the way. She had a friend out in Gaspé, they slept there on her hardwood floor. And they made love some more. Which way does the river run through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? Which way does the river run through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? I just see into the sun, got back on the 401. Since every town had a tale to tell and every street had dreams to sell. She talked about her history, said she was one quarter Cree, and her mother wouldn't let her know, but her father said that it was so. Which way does the river run through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? Which way does the river run through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? so darling, don't give up the ghost and make it out to the western coast. We can dive in the ocean there and turn around and head back here. 'Cause there's no place for you and me, but I love this country and the gas game's getting low when you left Ontario. Which way does the river go through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? Which way does the river run through this town? Which way does the wind blow when the sun goes down? Which way does the wind blow? Which way does the wind blow? Which way does the wind blow?
Hello. And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And thank you for bearing with us. Now, we talked about all kinds of stuff, but I want to talk about
the Alberta thing.
The Alberta thing.
Ugh.
Yeah, in the run-up to the, during the music break, you're like, we haven't talked about the Alberta thing.
Yep.
And Alberta seems to be in the news a lot when it comes to freaked out gay people, because there was the whole GSAs in schools, yeah. And it just seems to be escalating.
Actually, I read an article recently, I think it was actually in the Ottawa Citizen. I don't know what I was doing reading the Ottawa Citizen, but I do remember reading an article, and it basically said, with regards to Alberta and how a lot of people out west are a little bit sore that the Canadian government is trying to clamp down on the tar sands, and how Alberta's like, why are you restricting our industry? This isn't fair. You would never do this to anyone else. And then they're like, remember in the 90s when we shut down the fisheries on the East Coast because cod was going extinct and all the maritime provinces suffered from that? Remember that? And then they found a new way because we helped them do that. Remember that? And remember? And
also, I feel like spending billions of dollars to buy a pipeline counts as supporting.
Yeah. And then in the mid-2000s, when millions of industry jobs left Ontario and Quebec in 2008 with the crisis, and the entire region had to transition away from industry jobs. You remember that? Remember when that happened? And the
collapse of manufacturing.
Yeah. And then they kind of went down this list of all these major historical events where, like, you know, an entire province or region had to abandon some kind of industry. This is what I don't understand. Why don't we have cheap lamb in Canada? Like, when the fisheries collapsed, or when we stopped the fisheries, all I could think was,
it's because it's too cold. The little sheeps get too cold.
The East Coast is a windswept rock covered in grass. Every other windswept rock covered in grass in the world is covered in sheep.
New Zealand. Yeah.
Scotland. Yeah. Scotland. Yep. Windswept rock covered in sheep. Windswept rock. Put sheep on it. They're...
Your economic solution for the East Coast is sheep.
Well, I mean, it's not the full solution, because then you also get cheap yarn, and then you could do manufacturing with textiles, and then...
So wool.
Yeah.
Wool and lamb is your solution for the East Coast.
I mean, how many fishers lost their job? That's how many jobs you need to replace. You don't need to replace every job on the East Coast. And I'm not saying it's going to do everything, because you also need to do... you know, shipping and modernize and do like IT centers and stuff like that. Not that learn to code is a appropriate response, obviously, but I mean, mix it up a bit. Get some sheep on that big rock covered in grass and wind.
Speaking of that big rock covered in grass and wind, PEI, they've just reached second reading.
It's a sandbar.
It's not particularly rocky.
No!
It's not particularly big either, no. To be honest. But PEI just had the second reading of a bill looking to ban conversion therapy.
Oh, good.
It'll be bringing it in line with many of the other provinces across Canada. We'll be keeping an eye on that story as it unfolds. I haven't been to PEI yet. I don't know if it was a big rock or sandy. I'm so sorry about
that. It's Pretty Little Liars. Just watch, not Little House, what is it? Anna Green Gables. There you go.
My whole point was I haven't been to PEI, but I I would like to go there. So if anyone wants to go to PEI with me, then that's cool.
Awesome.
I Googled my carbon footprint recently. There's like online calculators to find out the size of your carbon footprint. And I fly a lot for work, so I would have to plant 50 trees a year to offset my carbon footprint.
Mm.
Although I'm like 5.4 kilos, the average North American is like 13.
Okay.
Because I don't drive anywhere.
Oh.
I mean, I barely leave the house.
So you just you save up all your carbon to use it all at once.
Yeah, on flights. Yeah. Whereas most people drive about. So yeah, it was 50 trees. You know, it cost me like $300 to offset my carbon.
So doctors.
Yes. Sorry, totally wandering off topic today.
No, it's normally me. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not one to judge.
I like talking about trees. Now, what am I talking about? The Alberta thing. United Conservative Party, the UCP in Alberta.
Yeah.
The member of the Legislative Assembly, Dan Williams, introduced the Private Members Bill 207. And the reason why this kind of hit the news is because the legislature in Alberta voted and approved it to the second stage, which means it's now going to be debated on. Just a quick heads up for our listeners. Generally speaking, if a bill is introduced by the government dictates the timetable of the agenda for what gets discussed when and where in the legislature. So it's easy for them to bring bills through relatively quickly. If the party in power has control of the committees and the house in which it's brought in, you can see bills turned around with pretty efficient speed.
Right.
If it's a backbencher or a private member bill, these are bills which the government itself isn't introducing.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, it could be Joe Schmo from your local constituency who really wants XYZ done. And they take the back seat to all of the government business.
Yeah.
And they can take a long time to get anywhere.
Yeah, years in some cases.
Absolutely. Yeah. The gender identity, gender expression
Even bill, if everybody agrees with it, it's just a matter of the scheduling of getting everybody to say, yeah, I agree with it. It could be a month between the discussion and the vote, or anyway.
So adding gender identity and gender expression as a protected human rights ground was a bill from, I think it was on various bills from the act that added homosexuality in, I think, the 90s or the mid-2000s. I forget exactly when.
Okay.
But gender identity, gender expression was dropped from that one. And then it was reintroduced in nearly every single, if not every single, sitting of parliament until it was finally passed. And that's because with Bill C-279, for example, under the Harper years, it got all the way through to the Senate, and then the government, there was an election, and it's like an etch-a-sketch with government. They just shake it clear, and anything that happened to be sat there is donezo, game over,
right.
And you have to start again from scratch. So private members' bills take a long time. They don't always go through. So as somebody who has been keeping an eye on political science, I can tell you, in folks in Alberta, this is not a guaranteed thing to happen.
Yeah.
But people are concerned. So back to the bill.
Yeah.
It's Bill 207. And in essence, what this bill does, I have read the bill. Unlike the Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, I have read the bill.
All right.
And what it essentially does, it does two things. It adds conscientious rights into the Alberta Human Rights Act and a couple of other places. So conscientious rights could be, I morally object to eating meat, for example. Mm-hmm. So if I am in hospital and, you know, on a hunger strike or you need medical intervention, I can object to being given meat, for example.
Right, okay.
You know, or a... if you are a Muslim woman, you could maybe object to shaking the hands of men in a workplace that would require that.
Right.
For example. So there's conscientious rights.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense in many cases, but typically it tends to refer, or people often understanding it, in conversations around the right to choose, access to abortion. Euthanasia is another one where people often refer to the conscientious rights.
It also fits into what has become known as the gay cake debate.
The gay cake debate, exactly, yes. Although
there's just basically, does a baker have to, by law, bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple?
Mm-hmm.
That's the very short version. And the answer depends on where you are in the world. Some of them is absolutely you must. Others is,
Well, in Canada, there was that recent, there was the Jessica Yaniv case in BC, in which case the judge said, you know, because one of the arguments in that case was Jessica Yaniv sued a whole bunch of people who did bikini waxes. And one
estheticians.
Of the estheticians.
Yeah.
And one of the arguments was that, you know, you can't force somebody to bake a gay cake. And the tribunal member, because it was the Human Rights Tribunal in BC, said that, you know, unlike a gay cake, baking a cake doesn't require you to touch somebody's genitals. At least it probably shouldn't. Whereas, you know, it's, you know, baking a cake is usually done in the privacy of your own workspace where you're making said cake. Whereas a bikini wax is much more hands-on, let's say. And you know, in that case, absolutely, you know, conscientious objection on the grounds there could make a lot of sense. In fact, in BC, some of those women made the case that they felt unsafe, it was against their religion, etc., etc., and they could have stood up on those grounds.
And a lot of them worked from home as well.
Which
changes a lot of the details.
So that the conscientious rights have... They haven't always trumped LGBT rights because there are competing rights. And I think it's important that we point to moments in history when someone's moral beliefs in something, you know, don't trump it. Baking a cake, you know, flour, sugar, icing, whatever. You know, if it's for a Jewish man, a gay man, a straight man, it's the same bleeding cake. Like, I don't, you know, it's, you know what I mean?
I'm in the camp. When it comes to that, like, I feel very on the fence because on the one hand, I don't think we should force people to do things. I think that's going down a bad path. But on the other hand, you should not have the legal right to justify your bigotry. The way that I usually resolve it is don't give your money to somebody who's a bigot.
Well,
like, if somebody says that, just go, okay, well, I'm going to tell all my friends and I'm going to go to your competitors. It doesn't apply, though, when you're talking about the issue that's happening in Alberta, because we're talking about medicine.
And that's exactly the point here.
And so it's so different the moment you throw in, like, you know, if a trans person gets rushed into an emergency room for something completely unrelated, like, you know, they slipped and fell on the ice, their femur broke. And if you break your femur, that can kill you because it can pinch some very important arteries in your thighs. You know, you want that doctor to set your leg and treat you as quickly as possible.
So Bill 207 amends the, oh my gosh, well, I read the act as well. I think it's the Medical Professionals Act or something, the Alberta Human Rights Act and the, what was the name of the act? Oh, it's going to bug me. But to prep this show, I also read I think it's the Medical Professionals Act. Is also one of the ones. And what it does is, first of all, if someone refuses to serve you, let's say you are a victim of rape, let's say, you know, and you want the morning after pill.
Okay.
And you go in to the hospital and the nurse says, I object morally. They're under no obligation to expeditiously tell you, refer you to anybody else who can provide that care under this particular amendment.
Okay.
And because it doesn't just apply to all of the nurses, it applies, and this is a long list, it would apply to emergency, primary, and critical care paramedics.
Ooh.
So if you are made homeless on the street, you cut yourself, a paramedic shows up, thinks you're gay, they can walk away because, you know, they disagree with your lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, And there's also midwives, chiropractors, podiatrists, psychologists, psychiatrists. Maybe you suffer PTSD as a war vet, but your psychologist doesn't believe in war. What are you going to do about that scenario?
Well, the weird thing, I would do just a little bit of pushback on the psychology-psychiatry angle, which is that you actually do develop a relationship with a therapist. So you would want to have a relationship with somebody who, like, if they turn you down, like, that's just a sign that you're going to avoid.
There's also lab technicians, ultrasound, x-ray technologists, pharmacists, physiotherapists.
Yeah.
You know, if you are trying to take your HIV medication and your pharmacist doesn't believe in it, you know, these are really, really audiologists, dental professionals, social workers,
mm-hmm.
you know. These are all people who now, with this amendment, could refuse to serve you from the minute, the cradle through to the grave. I think it was the Calgary Herald, I think, did a really great article kind of looking at some of these scenarios where, you know, people could be making those decisions. And it's not really relevant necessarily in Calgary, where there's other psychiatrists.
Yeah.
There are, you know, the radiology department has more than one technician.
Yeah.
You know.
But Alberta is mostly pastoral.
It is a very rural community.
Most of Alberta is countryside. Most of the population of Alberta lives in the city, but most of the footprint of Alberta is very far from the city.
So the concern here is that, you know, the only doctor in the area could maybe object to HIV medication for people who are gay, could object to providing care for folks who are trans. And bearing in mind, early and effective care for trans folks is a major deterrent to suicide ideation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have seen stats that indicate that when trans folks are taken care of, they don't commit suicide. That's hardly a surprising fact. But on the reverse, when they're denied service, suicide ideation goes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are things that cost lives.
Now, here's what I'm curious to see. How are the colleges reacting to this? And by college, I don't mean the schools. I mean, like, you know, the College of Nurses and Physicians, like the professional institutes that actually, they are the driving force behind your certification, that you cannot practice law or medicine or whatever until a college supports you. So even if the Alberta law passes, could the College of Nurses and Physicians say, if you deny somebody aid, you are violating an oath and we will no longer back your certification as a nurse or a doctor?
So the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Alberta is the college in question.
Right.
And they've said, quite frankly, it's confusing. You know, all this act does is it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
It is redundant. And it's confusing because now people are worrying that if they cut their leg open or, you know, they call a paramedic because they've been raped in the park.
Yeah.
Are they going to be left there to bleed out or are they going to be cared for? You know, these are, you know, crazy scenarios that people are thinking about because of this ridiculous bill.
But in the back of my mind, I'm like, a paramedic knows they could lose their license if they refuse to help somebody.
It would be unprofessional conduct.
Yeah.
Now, under the college, there is already a mechanism in place for conscientious objection. So if you are looking for euthanasia, you're looking for abortion, and your doctor does not believe in that and does not want to provide the care that would as a result of their beliefs, they are required to kind of expeditiously refer you to somebody who will.
And I know there's other famous cases, like doctors are, they are permitted to refuse care for direct relatives. So, you know, there's all these stories about, like, emergency room surgeons who refuse to treat somebody because it's like, that's my sister-in-law, and they cannot, there's an amazing emotional baggage that would go with, like, what if the surgery fails and she dies? So they can swap out for other medical professionals for various personal reasons. That exists for good reason. But yeah, the idea that, like, the colleges already have an internal mechanism for this sort of thing, if you don't feel comfortable doing this for the following reasons, this is how you refer to somebody who can treat them without causing harm and without delaying help. Because there's also going to be situations where it's like, there's no time. Like, it's me or it's death, and I'm not allowed to make the choice of you dying, so it's going to be me.
So the other thing that happens is the act addresses a second part. There's two bits to the act. One amends all of these codes.
Right.
And the second bit removes any right to complain, essentially.
Oh, now that, there is no universe where I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and the whole idea is, you know, the argument from this member, this MLA, Mr. Williams, I think it was, is...
So I take the devil's advocate position a lot, but that's stupid.
So his position is that nobody should be forced to lose their job as a result of upholding their own beliefs. Now, the College of Physicians and Surgeons has already said that there's mechanisms in place. This act only confuses things.
Yeah.
The Minister of Health in Alberta, at time of recording, like the Premier of Alberta, also has not read the bill.
Okay.
And isn't getting involved with it. The government of Alberta has essentially said that, you know, their members of the Legislative Assembly from the United Conservative Party can vote on their conscience. They can vote depending on which way they believe, mm-hmm. which is fine. It's not a whipped vote. And, you know, that is what it is. So the government's not introducing it. The government's not backing it. Half of them haven't even read it. Although I imagine by now they probably have. So, you know, the point is, there is already mechanisms in place. If somebody refuses it and you complain about it, the complaint goes to the complaints director of the College of Physicians. And I've looked at their stats. They release an annual report. I've done a deep dive into it, looked at the last 5-year trends. And there was about 500 quality of care complaints in the whole of Alberta in 2018.
And how many of them resolved?
Not many of them lead through to actual cases. Many of them, over half of them are dismissed you know, lack of evidence, et cetera, et cetera. The quality of care cases doesn't drill down on delays or refusal of service, mm-hmm. although that's one of many of the areas.
Well, the other thing is when you're talking about a resolution, you're not necessarily talking about somebody losing their license. It could also be somebody pulls them inside and says, do you want training?
The way it works is, you know, there's a number of different scenarios for the college here. Mm-hmm. Either it's dismissed because it's frivolous or spiteful or, you know, in BC Tribunal, it was brought for an improper purpose. Mm. So it's you know, there's ways of just dismissing it. What this MLA wants to do is any complaint brought about anyone who refuses any service on a moral ground is immediately dismissed.
Now,
not even a conversation. You can't look into it. You can't investigate it. You can't have any dialogue about it. It's immediately dismissed, which gives the users, it gives the health professional seeking public zero recourse.
Politicians should never introduce any laws that create a society that they personally don't want to live in. This is like the number one rule of politics, because what happens when the politicians, let's say this does pass, and then these politicians, what somebody on the conservative or the UCP who gets injured, gets rushed to the hospital, and every single doctor on staff votes green and is like, no, no, I can't treat that person because of made up reasons.
Deep held moral beliefs. I'm sorry, I can't serve you. I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous.
And then now you have to live with this world that you've created. Now, granted, that is sort of an exaggerated version. I think there's going to be at least one doctor who's going to be like, I'm going to do what needs to be done because that's what's appropriate, but I'm just going to complain the entire time, which is what I would do. But still, I mean, they're setting them, they're creating a world that they themselves would not want to live in if the other party were in power.
This is being seen by the MLA and by a number of others online as a huge win. You know, a major protection for clarifying and cementing the rights of these doctors who don't want to commit abortion. You know, it means they can't be fired from these leftists who are trying to force these measures on them. And that's not the case. This is like the rainbow poppy all over again. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you do not want to provide the care around abortion for your religiously held beliefs, you do not have to.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you tell said people, you know, refer them to other options.
And there are clinics that specialize in that. Like, unless you're in the deep country where there's only one local doctor, most people would go to the place that specializes in that so that you know you're going to get the best care, because there are family planning clinics out there.
Well, it is panicking the LGBT community because care provided around sexually transmitted infections and diseases may, you know, so, you know, if you're trying to get a, you know, check for syphilis, but you know, the doctor doesn't want to deal with you because you're gay. You know, how these are health, people's lives are affected by this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is something that would not stand in currently. And it just kind of, what it does is the bill as written doesn't require the practitioners to refer them quickly to anybody.
Right.
They just essentially have to say no and then tell them to Google it, essentially. you know, and which is not great. You know, WebMD is probably a quicker method. But, you know, that's the real recourse. And you can't complain about it. That's what he's proposing.
Yeah.
That anyone can tell you no and walk away. Paramedic in the street, optician, surgeon can turn around and walk away.
Bloody
and there's nothing you can do about it. So yeah, we looked at reported stats from the college. There's been about 500. There's only maybe about a dozen cases where people get disciplinary action as a result of it. The vast majority is mediation,
yeah,
is training,
yeah,
is,
yeah, yeah.
You know, actually over half of these cases are dismissed. Because I was wondering, I was like, wow, is there an epidemic of doctors being kicked out for refusing to do abortion? The answer is no.
No, and it takes 9 years at least to make a doctor, and we have a shortage. So anything that can prevent taking doctors out of the pool, I am all for that. Because I would not want to see fewer doctors in the system. If there's bad doctors, find out what they're good at and make it so that they only do that one thing. Mm-hmm. We have too much of a medical shortage right now. Canada's got a problem that not many people are talking about. And if someone is a big old douchebag jerk, send them off to where they don't have to deal with people that they're douchebag jerks to. But also make it very clear, you need training, buddy. You need to learn how to at least lie to people that you're okay with it. Because as far as you're concerned in the community, so long as you get the help you want, the help you need, and the help that keeps you safe and healthy, what they think about you is kind of their own business, so long as you never find out what that thought is.
Mm-hmm.
But something like this would let them just say straight to your face,
no, and walk away.
Yeah, and that's not
cool. I think the point I wanted to make is there is no epidemic of doctors being forced to provide abortions doctors being forced to euthanize people. That is not happening.
Yeah.
That is straight up fake news. And I think what's important here is that this is a bill. It's a bill to shine a light on the boogeyman, but the boogeyman isn't real. It's not there. It's a fallacy, and you know all well, it something does.
There, but
is,
it's like an angry squirrel.
It causes confusion. Yeah. It causes distress, and what it does most importantly is it makes the people who are most vulnerable looking for medical support question that medical support.
Yeah.
How likely are you now in rural Alberta to go and seek medical advice when all of these conversations are happening? You know, I think what it does is it puts people in a very difficult position. And I hope we'll keep an eye on the story as it progresses and sort of keep ahead of it. I don't expect this to become a bill. I don't expect it to come through. Mm-hmm. I think the college's current system is very appropriate,
mm-hmm.
And effective, and does weigh conscientious rights up against other rights.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's important. So, but we've run out of time.
Oh, okay.
We did, yes.
It happens to the best of us.
I wanted to play Brandi Carlile, but Brandi Carlile teamed up with a couple of other women to create the High Women.
Okay.
Like Highway Man, High Women.
Okay.
It's a country quartet. This is the song is If She Ever Leaves Me, and I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
I see you watch her from across the room, dancing her home in your mind. It takes more than whiskey to make that flower bloom. By the third drink, you'll find out she's mine. I've loved her in secret. I've loved her out of love. The sky hasn't always been too. She'll drink all the liquor and leave you the ice. That's too much cologne. She likes perfume. I've loved her in secret. She is.